Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
The Athletic.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is showtime. Please welcome the team of the Fulhamish podcast.
It's the Fulhamish podcast, your independent voice of Fulham FC. My name's Sammy James. Welcome to the podcast. And oh boy, what a day to be podding. Liverpool 0, Fulham 1. A famous win at Anfield for the mighty whites. As Jurgen Klopp's side lose 6 in a row at home, they were no match for Scotty Parker's awesome, awesome team. What a day. Absolutely delighted to be on the pod. I'm always delighted to be on the pod, but it's extra special on days like this. And joining me today is Mr. Tom Betts.
Hello, hello.
First question, what were you happier about? Glasgow Rangers winning the league or Fulham beating Liverpool?
No, it was Fulham beating Liverpool because I wanted to win it at Parkhead in 2 weeks' time. I wanted Morelos' first Old Firm goal to be the one that won Rangers the league. But yeah, I think that result at Dundee United at Tannadice just sums up this Scottish Premiership this season. But no, what a win. I was at work and my colleague, I had a couple of colleagues who are Liverpool fans, so their heads were completely leaving the 17th floor in London Bridge and flying way out into the Thames.
Amazing. Adifa Carson, hello.
Good evening, Sammy.
What are we drinking tonight, Adam?
I've had quite a few lemonades today. Might have slipped a gin in one or two.
Fantastic. And Jack Kelly, how you doing?
Oh, I am on top of the world.
You were supposed to be on the pod last week, but you had to bow out because you had the jab. If you are asked to get the jab. And that's what you did. And you were feeling a bit under the weather from some of the side effects last week. So are you fighting fit today?
Oh, I'm absolutely fine. I've just had a nice roast pork and we're raring to go to talk about the actual Fulham.
Fair enough. What a decadent lifestyle you lead, Jack Kelly. Right, Adam, what were the 3-word reviews? I imagine this is going to be fun.
I'm surprised that no one went with Kelly's roast pork now. I'll kick off with our very own Drew Heatley's Lamina's Liverpool Limbs.
Brilliant.
We've got Cormat with Win and Tonic. It's good, isn't it? And then we've got Owen Conway with Masters of Merseyside. And then Jozo, who obviously did those amazing prints for the Fulhamish shop as well, with We Still Believe.
Fantastic stuff. Thank you so much for your 3-word reviews. I think Fulham Twitter didn't know what to do with itself at full time. People didn't know if to tweet, drink, celebrate, run around the block. It was just one of those amazing, amazing days. And look, I know that like winning at Anfield maybe isn't what it would have been 2 months ago, considering the run they've been on. But Dom, it's a massive illustration of how far Fulham have come. You can look at how bad Liverpool are, and no doubt that's what all the papers, Match of the Day, will be focusing on tonight and tomorrow. But let's focus on the fact that Fulham were exceptional today. To a man, we took our chance when it came through Lamina. We were dangerous in attack, maybe not as lethal as we could have been, but let's gloss over that. And in defence, just stunning, really. And I genuinely think that this is one of the best defences in the league right now.
Yeah, I don't remember going into a game away at Liverpool feeling so confident. But as soon as I heard the news that 7 changes were being made to the starting 11 ahead of their Champions League second leg against RB Leipzig on, I think, Wednesday, I was confident that we could get a result. I think if we were going to win this game, it was only going to be a 1-0. I feel like that was the scoreline that was going to be. And it was interesting to see, obviously, where that goal would come from. But in that first half, obviously, Liverpool had a decent opening in the first few minutes. But as soon as we sort of got ourselves into the game, in that first half especially, we were the dominant team. You know, we were creating chances. You know, Nico Williams had an absolute mare on the right-hand side. Whether it was Lookman, Cavallero, Bobby Reid, he was just getting rinsed every single time. It was like he was getting offered no support by the players ahead of him. I think that's what happens when they play sort of a front three as opposed into a 4-2-3-1. But, you know, 1-0 up at half time flattered Liverpool, really. I mean, we could have been 2 or 3-0 up at the break. The only big chance for Liverpool that I really remember was probably the Jadon Sancho free kick in the first half, which sailed just over Ariola's left-hand post. And, you know, there was a dive from Mo Salah, which, you know, for me, it's another whole story, but those things just seem to go unpunished. But then, you know, the goal reminded me so much of Bobby Reid's goal at home against Liverpool, because, you know, Salah makes a complete mistake. It falls to him inside the box on the right-hand side and smashes it into the left-hand corner. And, yeah, what a finish from Mario Lemina. Great for him to get on the score sheet after that ridiculous handball decision against Tottenham on Thursday evening. So, yeah, what performance in that first half. And then going to the second half, we obviously knew that it'd be a different game. It would be, you know, Liverpool putting us under the cosh. But apart from, I think it was the volley from Diego Jota, which Areola tipped over absolutely brilliantly over the bar. Apart from that, they didn't have many clear-cut chances. And no. I don't remember the last time I've been confident in a Fulham defence. It's got to be under Roy Hodgson. Because even under Mark Hughes and Martin Yolf, in the better years under Martin Yolf anyway, I wouldn't say we had a phenomenal defence, really. I know we said I'd hang in Hughes, but this is probably the Fulham team that Fulham fans have been most behind in the Premier League since Roy Hodgson.
Oh, 100%. I think it's the most I've enjoyed a Fulham team, I think, since Roy Hodgson, Adam. And that is just such a credit to Parker. He's put us back on the map. He has put us back on the map. He's got Fulham fans enjoying watching Fulham again. And look, we've had some good years as well in that time. Look, who would forget the Slavisa Jukanovic championship side? But Slavisa never proved himself in the Premier League. Scott Parker is making me enjoy Fulham in the Prem. And that hasn't happened probably since that first Mark Hughes season. And that's less about Mark Hughes and more the kind of dynasty that Hodgson left. What a man Parker is. There was that debate earlier in the season. Is he a better coach than Lampard? Like, are we joking?
Well, I mean, it's pretty clear that he is as well. But I agree with what you're saying in the fact that it's the most I've felt confident in a Fulham team as well. I mean, I think confidence is a big part of it. We definitely did enjoy Slavisa's entertainers, the fact that we could always look at trying to outscore the opposition. But when you're actually going into a game against some of the biggest teams in the world, the best teams in the world technically, and we're showing that we can more than hold our own, I think that's a new level of Fulham in the fact that we're putting in some form that would actually see us in the top 10 if we had done it all season. We're pulling out at the time that matters, and I've got full confidence in this team that, you know, when Dom was mentioning, you know, it's the first time in a very long time that I've looked at, you know, having to defend a 1-0 lead and thought, I think we can do this. A lot of people were questioning, you know, us sitting back at 65, 70 minutes. And, you know, I can agree with a lot of that. I think we needed an out ball a little bit more than we had. But other than that, I didn't feel worried looking at our defence. I felt confident that everybody was going to be putting in their all to actually defend that lead. So, yeah, I'm loving watching Fulham at the moment.
Jack, you're a very emotional man when it comes to watching Fulham. Just sum up your feelings full time, because I tell you what, the world has been deprived of a fan cam tonight. Could you just imagine if you'd been in that away and Jack Kelly? I don't think you'd have left Liverpool. I think that would have been it for you.
I think I'd be in hospital. I'm not going to lie, on a hospital bed. But I tell you what, it was such a marathon of a game. It's one of those games where you think 90 minutes is really a long time, isn't it? But yeah. I thought the second 45 epitomised basically the spirit that Scott Parker's instilled in us all season. And yeah, when the full-time whistle went, just sheer relief, joy, and just pride, like, honestly. And this has been coming. I wasn't really shocked by the fact that we went to Liverpool and won, not because of Liverpool's form, but because of the way we play. And it's just remarkable how Scott Parker's taken us from, I remember Villa at home, how awful that was. And now look at us. Yes, we're level on points. We're still in the relegation zone, but what a platform to build on. We have to stay up. It's so important for the future of the club.
But you remember, you talk about Aston Villa at home, and yeah, that was a bad day. It's only just over a year when Barnsley came to Craven Cottage and put 3 past us. It's under a year when we went to Elland Road and got us handed a new one. how far he has built this team in that the space of time. It's only a year today since that Bristol City match at Ashton Gate. And you look at that lineup, and only two of that lineup now regularly get in the starting 11. Like, there's so much has changed in a year. And look, it's not been a good year, but actually, the what maybe one positive from the last 12 months is how well Scott Parker has done in that time. I mean, it's mad to think how much has changed in 365 days since we last attended a football game, Jack.
Yeah, I mean, I remember that game against Bristol City, and I thought we probably deserved the win. We should have had a penalty in the 90th minute, but of course that's not even important now. But you saying that has just brought back flashbacks of, I was standing in my friend's garden after watching us lose 3-0 to Leeds United and doing a fan cam, which was me just ranting about how I don't think Parker's up to the challenge. And then he proved us wrong in the playoffs. He pulled out these remarkable performances against Cardiff, remarkable performances against Brentford. And over the course of this season, we've played so well against the big teams. You know, should have possibly got something out of Chelsea if we didn't get down to 10 men. Could have drawn with Manchester United. We should have got the point the other night against Spurs. And this, like I just said, doesn't surprise me. It was coming. And I just think we've just had a fantastic turnaround. And that is pretty much down to a lot of people, but most importantly, Areola, Adrebayo and Anderson.
Yeah. You mentioned the performances as well, Jack. I agree. Farrell said it earlier on Full Time Live. There's only one game since Man City away where he said he felt like Fulham deserved to lose. And that was the Brighton away game at the Amex, where Brighton were better than us. And we actually could have won it late through Loftus-Cheek. Dom, let's go into the game. And I was a little bit concerned before Lamina's goal at how many chances Fulham had created. We hadn't put any of them away. And Liverpool did look reasonably dangerous sometimes when they got into their final third. And of course they would. They've got Salah, Shaqiri and Jota up front. I was a bit concerned at some points that it was going to be one of those days where we talk about how Fulham were really good in the first half, but ultimately Liverpool came out with a 2-0 win.
Yeah, I wasn't necessarily, I was saying, oh, it's one of those days where we could end up losing the game, but I did feel that we need, if we were going to score, it needed to be in that first half. Like, I was confident that, you know, if it was 0-0 at half time, I'd still be confident we could grind out a draw in the game. I just didn't think Liverpool were offering too much. But it's just, it's absolutely remarkable that Fulham Football Club have won away in Merseyside twice in a season.
Mm. Like, and that, you weren't there to see either of them.
I know, exactly. I mean, this is probably our second win at Anfield in my lifetime.
It wasn't that long since the last one.
One lone goal from, was it the Kaka Niklic or Risa Cross? Yeah. I feel like it was a midweek night. That's why I couldn't go to that game. But yeah, as I said, two away wins in Merseyside. And, you know, if you look at our away victories this season, Leicester, Everton and Liverpool.
wow.
What, like, absolutely crazy. You know, our record at Leicester isn't amazing. You know, we, two seasons ago, we obviously lost there. There was the cup game in 13-14. I remember the FA Cup when Montella made his debut when they were in a division below us and we drew. And it's just great to see a Fulham team that all the fans are behind, because I don't know whether games behind closed doors has got something to do with that. But if you think about, even under Slavisa Jokanović, even under, you know, Scott Parker, there has been divisions within the Fulham fan base about people talking about the manager, people talking about different situations behind the scenes. It's the first time in a very, very long time, probably, as we mentioned, for a lot of things since the Hodgson days, that it seems that all Fulham fans are united in their support of the team and in their support of the manager. And I think, you know, today, game plan wise, Scotty got it spot on. And, you know, it felt so weird just going into a game, not just away at a big team like Liverpool, you know, the champions, but away to Anfield where we never really get a result. And just sort of being quite confident that we could at least get a draw out of the game.
Yeah, I was so confident before this game, Adam. I almost had to sometimes tell myself off, thinking it is still Liverpool. They've still got really good players. You can't be this confident going into a game at Anfield. That's just not right, Sammy. Do not do this. But we were proven right. Just want to talk about Mario Lemina. Obviously, his first goal for Fulham today, and he took it fantastically. But his all-round performance on the pitch was exceptional again. Him and Harrison Reed, Jamie Carragher kept calling them terriers on the commentary. We'll come back to Carragher in a minute. But I just think Mario Lemina has really stepped up. And look, we've had a couple of questions asking, does Anguissa... what's the future for Anguissa? Because it's really difficult for him to get in the team at the moment. And who on earth would have thought we'd have said that at the beginning of the season?
I remember when back to the very start of the season when we were saying, you know, how is Lemina even going to get into this team? Why have we signed him on loan? I can't see him getting in the team anywhere near. You know, we were actually saying Kearney and Anguissa at that point in time. Midfields do change. And I think that one thing we've said a lot of is that Reed and Lemina are very similar players. And, you know, Carragher referred to them in the same way today. But whilst they are similar, that's actually not a problem for us right now because it means that one can fill in the job when the other one is, you know, moving forward a little bit more. So I've definitely noticed with Lemina, his link-up play has been probably the bit that stood out for me in the fact that he doesn't just sit deep. He is actually working his way through the thirds and Harrison Reed's always filling in behind or vice versa. But it's nice to look at today's performance and not think Lemina's the man of the match because he scored a goal. He's man of the match because of his all-round play, because of the fact he was consistently breaking up Liverpool's attacks. He was getting us on the front foot and he managed to take advantage of it with a goal. The goal was just an added bonus on top of what was an amazing performance. On the point of Anguissa, he is a Rolls-Royce of a player. He is incredible for us and I do hope that he has a way of getting into this team. I wonder if it's part of a three-man midfield at some point in time. I still don't think we've got the balance right when it comes to the final third just yet. And I wonder whether there's a way of fitting Anguissa into that as part of a three-man midfield. But at the minute, I couldn't think about dropping either Reed or Lemina.
Well, Jack on Friday's podcast did say that actually for this game, he would have started Reed, Lemina and Anguissa. Jack, Decker Dover-Reed got the nod today ahead of Loftus-Cheek. Didn't play in the same kind of role as Loftus-Cheek. What did you make tactically of that switch from Scott?
Well, I liked it because obviously it worked against Liverpool at home in terms of when we go into a back five out of possession. Of course, Bobby D. Cordova-Reed can do that really well, slotting in at right wing back. And I think that he's... I don't think he was like... I didn't notice him as much on the pitch as everyone else today, but I think he just did a stellar job at what he needed to do. And actually, when we broke forward, he was not really involved in the attacks. What I was really impressed with was leaving Loftus-Cheek on the bench because of basically foreseeing a situation where we might have the lead. And when we're on the counter-attack, he's so strong at running through the middle, even Anguissa as well, but Loftus-Cheek especially, that there's going to be space to run into on the counter-attack and alleviate some of that pressure. But in terms of Bobby D. Cordova-Reed, I thought he was... he didn't stand out to me, but he did a job in that five back and, you know, to a man, I thought all 11 were fantastic today. And we've got to give Bobby D. Cordova-Reed some praise.
You're loving still saying Bobby D. Cordova-Reed, aren't you? We had a few tweets after you first said it on the podcast and it really annoyed a few people because they now can't hear anything else either. So you're living in their head rent-free, Jack.
I
know you live in many heads rent-free. I know you're very used to it by now. Dom, the second half was an expected wave from Liverpool. I guess that's one thing about when you score just before half time and, you know, it's a big goal like that. We were always going to face a bit of a siege from Liverpool. I was weirdly confident throughout the whole thing, but there obviously was some quite last ditch defending. Anderson has taken a lot of the plaudits today, particularly that clearance that he made in stoppage time to... It was from Robertson's cross on the left-hand side. It was going straight towards Sadio Mane and he just stuck a leg out here the last second from nowhere. There's so many plaudits about our defence at the moment. I thought Adebayo was great today. And then, like, who can forget Aina and Tete as well, but particularly those two in the middle of Anderson and Adebayo. Like, they're just sensational. And we had a question here from Nick Patience saying, surely this is the best defence we've ever had, better than even Hangel and Hughes, Schwarzer, Conch and Pansel, which often had weaknesses in the fullback, or even the Pete Coleman team, or even Tagana's team that brought us up. It's massive praise. And it feels kind of foolish to say it, but I don't remember a centre-back pairing like this. These two are iconic.
Yeah, and I think what's so good about this defence is it's when you speak about the sort of Hodgson unit of Schwarzer, Hanglin, Hughes, Pansel and Konchesky, I still feel like this as a defensive unit is probably better. But I would still say Schwarzer, Hanglin and Hughes as a three, as a partnership, you've still got to hold them in higher regard for me than these three, because you know they got it to seventh, they got to Europa League final. But you can see the likes, if we can keep Areola and Anderson, obviously we already own Tosin, that they have the potential to reach those levels and potentially even higher. Who in regard to ability, maybe not in regard to the success they achieve, but it's since the 2010 season that we've had a defence like this. Because, you know, under Hughes and when it came to Aaron Hughes and Brad Hanglin and Schwarzer, it wasn't quite the same as it was under Hodgson. But I think what it is showing is that why defence is so important. Because, you know, if you can keep the clean sheet, then you always have a chance of grabbing that goal. Whereas if you're always trying to outscore the opposition, that's not really going to work. I mean, how many teams who do stay up are the teams who, you know, outscore the opposition. I know Aston Villa's defence last season wasn't what it was this season, but they still had their defence had good players in it, with the likes of Ezri Konsa and Tyrone Mings. And I think that is so vital, and I think more teams need to look at that. I mean, if you look at any team who's won any title or any major trophies, you know, you look at their defence. You know, if you look at, just look at Premier League winners, everyone has got that leader at the back. You know, you go back to the Arsenal Invincible teams, you had the likes of Tony Adams when they won a double in the turn of the century. You know, you look at Chelsea, they had John Terry. You look at Man United, they had Vidic and Ferdinand. You know, you look at, you know, that Liverpool team last season, they had Virgil van Dijk. Manchester City, Vincent Kompany. You know, the great Pep Guardiola team at Barcelona, you had Puyol and Piqué. Like, all these teams, although they may have great forward players, but you need such a solid defence to get anywhere in football. And I think that's why we're seeing this team having such a strong chance staying up this season, because it's really how important that defensive aspect of the team is.
Yeah. I mean, I think you are right, though, to rein it in a little bit on the plaudits to Schwarzer, Hanglin and Hughes, because as much as I'm admiring what Anderson, Adrabio and Areola are doing at the moment, as you say, Schwarzer, Hanglin and Hughes achieves real success for us. Seventh in the league, Europa League final. Like, it's very easy to have almost kind of a bit of like recent bias on this, because we're seeing these performances and because almost we're performing the underdog story at the moment. But I think that if they're truly to be compared to those three, then it can't just be staying up. However, I see the potential for them emulating those three. And that's massive praise in itself. And that's not denying what they've done already. They are fantastic. But I think we have to be careful when saying these guys are better than Schwarzer, Hanglin and Hughes, because they haven't achieved anywhere near the success that those three did. Just before we take a break, your final thoughts from the game and where we go from here, really. We're level on points now with Brighton. Obviously, they've got a slightly better goal difference than us. Newcastle got a point today against West Brom, which is a terrible result for them. Absolutely terrible. But actually, I thought the best result for us. I know a lot of people wanted a West Brom win.
I mean, they were lucky that Newcastle got a point in that game, the chances that West Brom had. But yeah, I said a point is great, because I feel like the West Brom game, there would have been so, if they had won the Baggies, I mean, there would have been so much pressure on us to get something in that Liverpool game. So yeah, I do think it was a point in that game was actually probably quite good, and I think a 0-0 especially as well, with neither team sort of getting on the score sheet. But to be fair, actually, I thought for a 0-0, it was actually quite an entertaining game.
Yeah, it wasn't a bad one, was it? I mean, Adam, what are your just general thoughts on the relegation battle now? 11 games to go. I mean, it's not can we do it. It's we're doing it, right? This is happening.
Yeah, We are doing it right now. It's just the case that, you know, you look at today's result, you can look at it from two angles. You can look at it all against other people and all the versus points and saying, you know, Newcastle got their point today and Fulham got three. But it's all about how many we continue to pick up. And what we have is the momentum. All the players are mentioning it after the game. We do have that momentum and the mentality to be able to keep this going. Today's 3 points were slightly unexpected. You know, if you'd looked at this run, we definitely wouldn't have been expecting probably the 3 points to come today necessarily. But if you start to look towards now, we have to average about a point a game and get some wins here and there. This is where that solid defence and Scott Parker's mentality of keep what we have sometimes in games is going to come to the forefront. You know, it's a dreadful result for Newcastle. There will be some more dreadful results to come for some of the other teams around us, hopefully. And even when if Fulham do miss a few points, I'm confident that we'll be able to pick up enough draws and wins along the rest of the season with this team playing how they are. It doesn't seem to matter as much who the opponents are. It's more about it is in our control slightly.
Yeah. And just before the break, Jack Kelly, are we staying up?
You'd love to think so. I mean, based on what I've seen today.
Oh, come on, Jack. Come on. You're the most positive guy I know.
No, I am. I think
just,
we will.
I just wanted you to go, we are staying up.
No, I think we will stay up. But that is based on the fact that we play with such confidence and we go to places like Liverpool with no fear. So I think we've got something else that Newcastle don't have, that West Brom do not have, that Sheffield United definitely don't have. And look, if Brighton, as long as Brighton keep not scoring goals and losing games, look, we're on the same points as them. We should be 16th, given what happened on Thursday night. So, Sammy, to answer your question, we are totally staying up.
Yes, Jack, come on. All right, we're going to take a quick break. Loads of questions in the post box today, so we'll get into them next.
This is an advertisement for BetterHelp, a portal for finding online therapy. How's your social battery right now? If you feel a bit drained or lacking enthusiasm to meet all the social commitments in your life, then that can be a totally normal thing, especially with things picking up as we head out of winter. I know that pretty frequently a weekend just doing a few chores and watching the football was about the limit of my energy resources, but therapy can be a place to help you gain the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your batteries. Contrary to popular belief, therapy isn't just for those who have experienced major trauma. The overall goal is to empower you to be the best version of yourself. And if therapy is something you've considered, then why not give BetterHelp a try? BetterHelp is entirely online and designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. They'll match you with a UK mental health professional with a wide variety of expertise. There's no referral needed, and you can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge, giving you complete control over the whole experience. Fulhamish listeners get 10% off their first month at betterhelp.com/fulhamish. That's betterhelp.com/fulhamish.
Part two of the Fulhamish podcast, and I'm joined by Dom Betts.
Hello, hello.
Adam Fakarsson.
All right.
Or Adamio Leminarsson, as he's called himself on the interface today. And Jack Kelly's called himself Jurgen Klopp JK. Hello, Jack.
Good evening. Good evening, everyone.
I don't know why you've called yourself after Jurgen Klopp.
Well, it's a play on words. Jurgen Klopp, as in my initials as well, and then JK as in he's a joke.
Oh. Banter!
Year 7 mentality.
Yeah, I love it, Jack. It's petty, but it's necessary. I enjoyed the tweet that I did not put up on the Fulhamish account earlier with asking Jurgen Klopp how many home games he's lost in a row, where he's there going 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. I mean, just wonderfully petty. And if you can't enjoy the small moments, then what can you enjoy? Okay, let's get into the questions. First one from Drexian Wavejumper. His name caught me out the other week, actually. I'll go to you on this one, Dom. Is Anderson this year up there for best individual season in the Premier League for Fulham?
It's a tough one, but it's the best one in recent memory if you're going to be sort of a player being so pivotal, because we saw in the FA Cup when Adebayo was playing next to like Michael Hector or Tim Ream, for example, he simply wasn't the same player. Anderson adds such a calmness to this defence. I don't think you can say he's our most best individual player in a season ever. I don't think, you know, in considering what we've achieved in the Premier League previously of, you know, finishing the top half, but he's definitely, I would say, most influential in regard to that sense. I don't think if you're quantifying an individual player's performance, you can go to a player when you're sitting in the bottom three, but when it comes to how much influence a player has on a team when he's in compared to when he's out, I don't think you can really look past someone like Joachim Anderson.
Yeah, I mean, Colin Bugler has just said, more, well, not really a question, but more a statement, just said, can Reed, Anderson and Areola share the Player of the Season award? And oh my God. I mean, look, I pray to God we stay up, and we shouldn't be mistaken for thinking we're out the woods, because we're not, because we're still 18th. But let's say we stay up. The decision that we're going to have to make on Player of the Season will be so, so difficult. I mean, Adam, who would you give it to right now? If time stood still right now and this was the end of the season, is it Reed? Is it Anderson? Is it Areola? Is it someone else? I mean, Lookman surely got to be in there with a shout as well, and he would normally in a normal season, but I don't think he does.
If we put out, if we stay up, and then you've got a possibility of saying, if we give Areola, you know, Player of the Season, does he sign a permanent contract with us? Maybe that will help swing it. But at the moment, I couldn't pick between them because, you know, Harrison Reed has been there pretty much the whole season for us, whereas the other two did come in a little bit later. In terms of impact, I personally probably give it to Areola. I think he's probably had the biggest impact for us. I know that's going to be controversial, so I'd probably give it to Areola based upon individual performances, but Reed for probably the season-long impact that he's had.
And just completely ignoring Anderson, which, like, yeah, I mean, it's just such high praise for everyone, really.
It is. I mean, also, you've got to take into account that even if we were to not give Player of the Season to Anderson, everyone's going to remember the individual contributions that all of this team had if we do actually manage to pull this off.
Yeah. I mean, Jack, who would you give it to right now?
Areola, based on the fact that, you know, without him, we would have conceded more goals and that would have contributed to more defeats. So I always look back at the save he made away at Brighton, just from point-blank rage. What a great save that was. The save today from Jota's volley. He's just been outrageous. He's made, I remember, a Wolves away. He just made saves that you're just basically not meant to make. And he's kept us in this season so many games. I mean, you think of the Sheffield United, they'll think, yeah, it's a penalty. Chris Wilder still thinks it's a penalty. But of course, that saved us and got us 3 points. So that would have been two dropped. I can't look beyond Areola, but then, you know, you look at Anderson with his balls, he pings out wide and gets Lookman in behind against Sheffield United. Even today as well, he got plenty of space to play those balls out. And he's been a rock at the back. But then again, you can't just compliment Anderson and go, well, I don't think Anderson would have had a great season, as good of a season as he's had if he was alongside Hector or Ream.
Yeah.
I think that Tosin Adebayo compliments Anderson. And that's what makes the partnership so strong. So if you want to give Anderson team of the season, you've got to also look at Tosin. But for me right now, to answer your question, it's Alphonso Areola.
The mad thing about this Player of the Season is that there are some other players that, like, really deserve recognition as well. I know I sit on Ola Aina Fan Club Island, and I am the leading founder of it. And come join me over here, because I'm having a whale of a time. But, you know, Lookman, Aina, Adebayo, as you mentioned, there's just so many that deserve that. I mean, Lamina Arangiza, to a point, like, it's just fantastic. Thomas from Berlin sent this question. Thomas often tweets when he's listened to the podcast with how far he's run, which I quite enjoy as a bit of a flex. Just and a few people have been doing this, just enjoyed that run, smashed out 15 kilometers. I'm like, fair enough, didn't really need to know, but I enjoy it nonetheless. He says, maybe today is not the time to be critical, but I've been thinking about this for quite a while. I was reminded today, as brilliant as Lookman is on the ball, he clearly lacks the view for a better positioned teammate. Would be great if you could touch on that. Dom, I thought there was a couple of moments today where, I don't know, I felt like Lookman maybe made the wrong choice at the crucial moment. There was a one I really remember in the first half where he got played through on the left and he decided to cut back and shoot on his right when the opportunity was definitely there on his left foot. And we know that he sometimes doesn't find particularly Anthony Robinson when he's on the pitch. It's really, really harsh considering everything we've been seeing today, but I don't know. He's quite a frustrating player, Lookman, just because I feel like he gets into so many opportunities. He's at the heart of everything we do going forward, but just that final decision-making isn't always perfect. There was also that chance in the first half where it was quite an easy cross to find Josh Madger and he hit it over him. He is a frustrating player as much as brilliant at the same time.
Yeah, I get where he's coming from, but you do realise if Adam Lookman's not in the team, for example, we really have F all else. Like,
yeah, no.
And that's the main issue. I think the thing you may look at, you know, Lookman being a frustrating player in regard to his end product, but not many of the other players in our team are getting into those positions. You know, if you're getting the ball into those positions, you know, you're more likely that a goal will come of it instead of having a frustrating player. Let's say you had Loftus-Cheek in there instead of Adam Lookman. I'm not saying they play in the same position, but, you know, another attacker, for example. And I think we saw today that when Ruben Loftus-Cheek can be used to a much bigger effect than when he's starting the game sometimes, that him coming on when we have the lead to hold up the ball and be that sort of a stronger player through the middle. I think Lookman, I don't think you can be super critical of him because he's one of those players who's going to create those chances for himself. And how many times in recent years have we been so frustrated with, you know, our wingers not even doing that? You know, I look back to last season with the likes of Cavalera and Knockaert. So I'm not one who'd be critical of Adam Lookman because I think he's arguably been our best attacking outlet of the season in regards to the creation of chances. I think he just really wants to prove to everyone that he's up to quality. And I think that sometimes that stops him from making the right decision. But I don't think we're really in a stage to be criticising Adam Lookman when he's been so good for us this season in regard to chance creation.
Okay, on to the next question. I just like this one from Justin Rains, who said, another win for Sammy. Yes, it was noted. The curse is well and truly over now. Thank you very much, Justin. Oliver Smith says, I'll go to you on this one, Adam. If Scott's superstitions means keeping on that lucky astronaut suit, so be it. Can we just have a moment to talk about what Scott Parker was wearing? It looked like somehow a duvet had been made into a jacket. I saw there was a comparison to Alan Partridge, which is currently going viral at the moment. I mean, wow. I liked it and didn't like it at the same time.
Yeah, I mean, I certainly noticed it early on in the game as well because I remember tweeting a few weeks back, does he just have several of those navy turtlenecks that he just switches for each game, or does he just have a really efficient like washing routine? It turns out, I think his washing machine was broken this week because he was basically wearing, I actually put my whole sofa cushions into a washing machine recently and they came out looking pretty much the same as his coat did today, apart from like it had way more padding to it. So yeah, he was wearing that around himself. And the interesting thing was as well, he didn't look entirely comfortable in it for the entire game, but he does now have to wear this for every future away game at a big team that we play.
He looked a bit like, have you ever tried to wear two coats at the same time? Just, and you can't move your arms.
It's like just like when you play dress up and you think, how many coats can I actually get on? And actually, I've done that when you go to the odd Fulham game and you just think, this is going to be freezing, I'm going to layer up. But he had just kind of done that all with a massive grey layer over the top.
It's when your mum goes, no, you need another layer. And you're thinking, I'm wearing a coat, a jumper, an underfleece and two T-shirts. You can't surely give me another layer. And she insists. And then you turn up to the football game like, and you can bounce off pillars because you're so padded up. Yeah, it just cracked me up. I just couldn't work out what was going on. Jack, on a slightly more serious point, Vincent Leander asked, did you find Liverpool's lineup respectful? If they were playing Chelsea or Spurs today, there's no way they're making seven changes. And when did the FA stop handing out fines for playing weakened teams? I was put back by what Jurgen Klopp did. Part of me was thinking, Is he just trying to dramatically change it up in order to just see if he can get a different result out of his team? But they're 2-0 up against Leipzig in the Champions League. They're not going to lose that game. Well, very unlikely to lose that game.
They very much should. Although yeah, this
surely,
is... No,
surely... No, because you're going to
be
playing
a home game that won't be at Anfield, so it'll probably be
all
right.
Oh, yeah. Surely it was more important to beat us today. Did you think there was a lack of respect?
I couldn't really care less, to be fair. I mean, they put out seven changes, and that just suits us because they were playing a three out of their four defenders were, I would say, inexperienced, especially at Premier League level. So I was licking my lips at their lineup, thinking we can go at them. And like I said earlier, it doesn't surprise me that we won the game. Look, Jurgen Klopp could do what he's like. He likes. He's lost five home games in a row. Maybe
he might want to change that then.
He would have changed.
He might want to change, stop doing what he likes and doing what works.
Yeah, look, they've lost five home games in a row, so maybe he just six now, but beforehand, so yeah, he put out a weird lineup today. I think he put the Swiss knocker on in Yerdan Shaqiri, and I thought he wasn't very good at all.
Swiss knockout.
James Milner's a great professional. He can play, you know, all around the back. He can play left back, right back, centre mid and wherever. And then, you know, he did okay. Naby Keita, not bad. But, you know, I don't really want to sit here and talk about Liverpool. I want to talk about the great Fulham team that was today. But I don't really care that they made seven changes. I care more about the fact that Scott Parker's just done a job over Jurgen Klopp.
Yeah, he has 100%. And look, I kind of thought the same thing. Like, okay, disrespectful, not disrespectful, whatever. Like, if you're going to put a weakened team out, we're going to beat you. And we can still be excited that we beat Liverpool away from home. Like, it doesn't take anything. It doesn't take any weight of the gloss out of it. And it doesn't mean we get less points because we beat a weakened Liverpool. We beat a team in the Premier League. We've only had five wins all season. We're partially just excited because of that. But I guess with the grandeur of the team and the stadium that we won at, I guess it just makes it that kind of extra sweet. Dom, I think Cody's getting ahead of himself and he says, if by some miracle we take 3 points from Man City next week, what will you do? They've obviously didn't win tonight against United. This run doesn't continue, does it?
Who knows? No, I don't think it will. I think that, you know, I think it's probably not, it's not good. Although, at least we're not City's immediate bounce back game from this defeat to Manchester United.
They play on Wednesday against Southampton, don't they?
Yeah, they've got Southampton in the week, who obviously got their win against Sheffield United, but you'd imagine City will want to bounce back. So hopefully they get everything out of their system against Saints on Wednesday. And so they won't be as trying to put four or five passes, which won't happen anyway, but against us on the weekend. But if you look at the reverse fixture, which I think was beginning of November, I feel like it was the first week...
December,
it was when pubs had just reopened. I think it was when the substantial meal rule had just
Dom doesn't work by months, he just works by when the pubs are open.
Works by scotch eggs.
Yeah, it was when the substantial meal rules opened. I went to a pub in Fulham to watch the game, and although the game was over fairly early on in it, it was a dodgy penalty that they got through Sterling anyway, which arguably was a dive. So
never a penalty.
We showed that we were competent in the fixture then. So I don't see why. I'm not saying we should be going to taking on City at the Craven Cottage and thinking, well, we can beat these lot. But it's not. I don't think you can just write the game off completely. I know they had won, 21-22 games in a row before today. But United shown they got an early goal through that penalty after about 1 minute after a silly decision from Jesus. It's not like this invincible Manchester City team who can't be beaten. I'm not saying we are going to go and do that, but I think this win is so important just because we only got 1 point out of Palace and Tottenham. I think when you're looking at this run of four games, I know Liverpool have been diabolic at home since the turn of the year, but I think that people were looking at the Palace game and the Spurs game as where we'd be picking up the 4 points, for example, not the Palace game and the Liverpool game. And, you know, after the City game for the international break, we take on Leeds at Craven Cottage, obviously on the Friday night before the international break. And, you know, we showed in the game at Elland Road in the reverse fixture that's when we were diabolical, and we nearly got a point out of that game. If we had the defence we had now, we probably would have won that game 3-1. So I'm so much more confident now, like you know, going into a certain, before that 7 points in a week, you know, it's crazy in what, a space of a month, how we've gone from being 10 points behind. I know we had games in hand, but we've gone from 10 points behind to now being level with the team in 17th place. So there's no reason why we can't be optimistic going into a game like Manchester City. Yes, it's going to be tough, but who knows what can happen. And if we, as long as we, you know, shut City out from getting an early goal, you know, anything can really happen there.
Wow. Who knows? I mean, the confidence is sky high at the moment. Speaking of confidence, Sam Lockhart just asked, is it too late to start thinking of getting into the top four? Still mathematically possible, I believe, my friend. Adam from Aaron asks, how about getting too defensive at the start of the second half? I get it at the 70th minute, but holding back for an entire half won't work most times. I disagree slightly. I understand his rationale, but with Scott Parker's teams, it kind of does seem to work.
I mean, I think we had something like 30% possession in that game, and we still managed to keep them out. They were bringing on, you know, the likes of Sadio Mane. You know, they still had Salah on the pitch, and they didn't really look that dangerous. Okay, there were a few last-ditch challenges from Anderson, but I didn't feel too worried about it. I would, however, agree with the point that it could be a little bit early against some teams to do that one. We didn't. I was screaming for an out ball, and you were kind of watching us thinking that every time they keep clearing it, there has to be someone up the pitch. You can't go completely 10 at the back as we ended up doing. So when they brought on Mitrovic, that did give us a bit of that release off the back, you know, the defence. I think that Scott just had to do that because he couldn't see a way for us to see that game out unless it was defending. He knows it's our strength. So if he is playing to our strengths, I can't criticise him for that.
Yeah.
I think if you're looking statistically as well, like that Man United game at home is still the only game that Scott Parker's lost as Fulham manager when he's taken the lead. And that was Areola, you know, uncharacteristically spilling the ball and then a wonder strike from Paul Pogba. So, you know, understand that, you know, history tells you being a Fulham fan, you should never be, you know, hopeful when you've got a 1-0 lead away from home. But this Fulham side is different. And we've seen under Scott Parker that when he's won the lot, he knows how to see games out, or he knows how to not lose games. And I think that's one thing. I don't think people forget it, but people think when we're protecting a lead, people often are used to the history of Fulham teams where we would concede these late goals. But as we've seen under Scott Parker, only one defeat when we've taken the lead, and that was for a wonder strike and a goalkeeping mistake. So yeah, I think even when we do take the lead, you've got to be confident of seeing out the game, especially with the defensive qualities we've got in the likes of Olarina, Joachim Anderson, Tosin Adebayo, Kene Tete, Areola in there. And then even when Bobby Dekanova Reed drops in as well, Harrison Reed, Lamina and Geese in front of him. You've got to be confident in Scott Parker and his team that actually this is actually a Fulham team that can see out results.
Yeah. And also at the moment, I think that it is easier to see out results. Right. I think if you'd have had the Anfield crowd there, you know, begging the ball in at the Kop end for 45 minutes, they may have broken through. And clearly this season has shown the impact of crowds. Effectively, the last 12 months has been an intensive scientific study into finding out how crowds affect football. And you can see it in the amount of away wins. And a game like today, I reckon Liverpool would have somehow found a way if there was an Anfield crowd there, because they'd have just sucked the ball into the net somehow. But, you know, it's not there at the moment, and it totally works. Fingers crossed next season, if we all do get back to normal, by then Scott might have found a way for us not to be having to hold on for 45 minutes. But right now, we just desperately need the points, and he's using the situation. Speaking of holding on, Jack, Alex Pure Power asks, where did those 2 minutes of extra stoppage time come from?
Don't get me started. Kevin Friend.
What was happening there?
Kevin Friend had a shocker, because not only was there 1 minute of added time in the first half, he added on 2.5 almost just after we scored. I know we had the celebrations and stuff, but that didn't really last long. But I was so confused, because what was it? There was a goal. It was like a goal kick for Fulham. And I thought, oh, that's surely that then. Or something. I thought maybe a goal kick to Liverpool. And then suddenly
it was
they
goal
had
a kick to Fulham. Yeah. You thought that was about 94 and a half minutes.
Yeah. Yeah.
I was fully expecting it to be blown then.
I was like, that's it. Game over. But somehow they got a free kick and managed to lump the ball in and then get a corner. And I was thinking, what is going on? Where's he got the time from? Areola maybe took a little bit too long with his goal kicks, But Kevin Friend then should have the authority to yellow card him if he thinks he's taking too long. But the whole refereeing today was a little bit weak. But yeah, where the hell did that time come? But it doesn't really matter. We got over the line, and it was actually interesting. I saw a few people put up their heart rates in that 45 minute and how many beats per minute they were doing, which was quite interesting. Those who have the technology to do so, but. Delighted for the 3 points. Yeah, I saw a couple of people. Jeff Proust, but
was that an app on your phone or something? How do you that?
I've got my Apple Watch. I've just ran up my cardiogram now. Okay, that doesn't look particularly healthy. There's a big spike in the middle of my day, and it looks like towards the final whistle, it was getting towards 138, which is about the same as it would do if I was going for a light jog. So yeah, I think we've also looked as well. If you were to do blood pressure monitors between Fulham fans and people that aren't, there's 100% higher blood pressure and higher heart rates for those that are Fulham fans. But I wouldn't swap it for the world.
God, everyone, take care out there. Sounds pretty serious. The final question. This is one from Nate. He says, question from the States. What's the word on getting crowds back this season? If it all comes down to May the 23rd, I've got to think having supporters back at the Cottage favours Fulham. And, well, it's very interesting you asked that, Nate, because I think this week it's likely to be confirmed that the Premier League wants to push back game week 36 to game week after game week 37, so that at least 2 to 3 of the last Premier League games all have fans if everything gets released on May the 17th, which is another stage of the UK's kind of exit from lockdown. May the 17th is when they're going to allow, I think, around 10,000 fans back into stadia. Before that, it'll be completely behind closed doors. At the moment, it would mean that only the last game of the season would have fans. But of course, the likes of Newcastle are complaining because they're just envisioning a situation.
I don't think Newcastle should complain, because if fans coming back for them is not a good thing.
Well, I know, but I mean,
I'm discussing this with my Newcastle mates. Like, he says fans actually being back at a game at St James's Park will do nothing to help the team. Because if they're sitting in 18th place, for example, they're not going to be cheered back, are they?
No.
It would be pretty hostile, to be fair.
I just hope we only have one home game back because of that. Because of getting a ticket in the Brighton ballot, I have priority access in the next one after a government lockdown got announced. I'm hoping the first game back is the Newcastle game, because then I'll have the, as I said, the priority access, which I'm hoping means a guaranteed ticket for that Newcastle game if all things go ahead.
I mean, I look at the situation now, and what I'd quite like, I mean, if you'd have asked me a month ago, I'd have snapped your hands off for that final game being a showdown between Fulham and Newcastle. Right now, we're a point behind them. I'd quite like that game to be done and dusted, and we're all just turning up with our sombreros on and celebrating the fact that Fulham has stayed in the division.
It can't be worse than the last time we had Newcastle at home, when we lost 4-0 on the last day.
Oh, that was awful.
Yeah,
I don't want to stay to the end. I really don't.
I was in the Golden Lion by full time, I think.
I think we all were, Jack.
I was just done with that season.
All right, well, thank you all for your questions. We're going to take another quick break. Part 3 of the Fulhamish podcast. Sammy here with Dom, Adam and Jack. So all that remains to be done today, Adam, is to name the podcast. What would you like to go with?
Well, I think given how optimistic we are and in such a good mood, I think we're going to have to go with Jozo's We Still Believe.
We Still Believe. I mean, it is kind of, you know, obviously we stood up when we still believed that time 11 years ago against Hamburg. And right now, Fulham really feels like it's in those kind of halcyon days again. And fingers crossed, the kind of sun keeps shining on our performances, because right now, I truly believe that Fulham deserve to stay up. And the fact that we're going into a game against Man City and we didn't actually think that it was 100% certainty that we will heavily lose the game, I think just says it all against a team that has just come off of winning 20 in a row. Final question here from CM10 just asks, can we play Liverpool every week? I think that would be quite nice, wouldn't it, chaps?
Only at Anfield.
Oh, well, yes, of course. Yeah.
I think after what happened on Thursday night, I'm a firm believer in football karma, and the fact that Mario Lemina's goal got disallowed because of his having an arm or having a hand or a limb, and he is the one who scores the goal to give us 3 points, a deserved 3 points at Anfield. That's a very fitting way of rounding it off.
Yeah, exactly. We channeled the frustration of Thursday and brought it into a fantastic win at Anfield. Let's see what happens again next Saturday against Man City. Thank you to my guest today, to Dom Betts. Thank you very much.
No worries.
Adam Farquharson, thank you very much.
Cheers, Sammy.
And Jack Kelly, thank you very much.
Cheers, Sammy. Thanks.
Myself, Jack Collins and Peter Rutzler will be back on Thursday's podcast looking ahead to that Man City game. Have a brilliant start to your weeks with a stride in your step after three excellent points today. Come on, you Whites.
You Whites. You Whites.